tomorrow all the things were gone. I'd worked for all my life, and I had to start again with just my children and my wife. I thank my lucky stars to be living here today,
where the flag still stands for freedom, and they can't take that away.
And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free. And I won't forget the men who died, who gave that right to me. And I gladly stand up next to you and defend her still today, 'cause there ain't no doubt our love has left this land.
God bless the USA.
God bless the USA.
Wow, thank you, Thumper.
You betcha, Dan. Good morning.
Well, good morning. I have to thank Lee Greenwood and the Singing Sergeants. That's a fantastic lead-in. And someone I have on my show today is an old friend, and I mean an old friend. Sorry, Bill. Bill and I are friends from quite a while back. We got to know one another a number of years ago because we were both involved in the Montana Freedom Movement. And Bill is a retired full colonel from the U.S. Marine Corps. He was offered his a star to become one of the generals, and he turned it down because he would, had about a gut full of the whole political crap of the Marine Corps. But he also loved the service, and when he was there, he was the commandant at the end, the commandant of the Marine Corps Intelligence Training Center in Quantico. And some people say that's an oxymoron, but once they get to know Bill, they realize there's a lot of intelligence in the military. So with that, I have to say, Bill, I really look forward to this program because we're going to be talking about a subject near and dear to our hearts, and that's how NGOs and tax-exempt foundations and so-called nonprofits have literally bought and paid for our government, and actually not just our government, world government, and how the nonprofits are using their money that they don't pay taxes on to shape the entire political system of the entire world. And meanwhile, the American middle class are dying off as a result of being overtaxed and having these nincompoops in Washington spend money on all these programs like COVID and all the other crap while they steer us into the new world order. So that sounds like a pretty deep subject, but I have to tell you, Bill, you and I have talked about this a number of times, and I'm looking forward to this. This is when you're here, it's kind of like sitting in my living room talking to an old friend.
Oh, good. I hope so. Just a couple of corrections. I never even stayed in long enough to get selected for general. I was all done with it before that. And then I was the CEO of the intelligence schools in Damneck, not Quantico.
I'm sorry. Wow.
No.
I thought it was Quantico.
Yeah, I just thought I'd better correct it in case somebody called Paul and said, who is that guy?
Okay.
No worries. Hey, you know, Dan, I've been thinking a lot about this issue since you called the other day. And I thought, I think even to make the people understand, we probably should go back and talk a little bit about the fact that our world as we know it has fundamentally changed from what mm-hmm. we grew up. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, the things that we grew up believing really aren't true. And if we continue to look back at what we learned in school or high school or whatever and say that world still exists, then it's hard to understand really this fundamental shift in our nation and in the world.
Well, you've talked about it with me. We've recognize that really what's happened is that the progressive socialists, the Marxists, within the world community have been really moving us in this direction for 100+ years. And this is kind of a culmination of two things. Number one, the American people have been sound asleep, thinking that we won the so-called Cold War when in fact we lost it because the communists really went underground and have been doing what Antonio Gramsci called, when he wrote the prison notebooks, the move through the institutions. We've been losing our education system, our media, all these things have been transforming or morphing into kind of pro-Marxist organizations. But the biggest problem we've got in this country is that the American people have been sound asleep, just letting this stuff happen. Those of us who have been out there screaming, wake up, people, wake up, we've been considered radical.
Yeah, absolutely. 100% agree. And I was just, I was thinking this in light of, I was at dinner with some people a couple of weeks ago, and we're kind of talking about, I was talking basically about the decline of our nation. And this person said, well, you know, I mean, we're the only nation in the world that's got free speech and private property ownership. And I said, well, first of all, we don't have free speech anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we can see that with this last election. Freedom of speech is, in fact, you know, your speech is going to be used against you. The second thing is private property ownership. And the reason why I bring these two up, because fundamental to when we look at the founding of our nation, the two things that the founders in my reading of most of their letters and stuff was that private property ownership and freedom of speech were probably their two primary focuses, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you can't say that we own property anymore either. I pointed out to him, I said, well, I said, that shirt you're wearing, do you own that? And he said, yes. And I said, do you pay taxes on it? Of course he doesn't. I said, well, if you own your land, why are you paying taxes on it? Because the point is the government can, mm-hmm. at that point, can come and confiscate your land.
You know, and two years, your property goes up for public auction to pay the taxes.
Right, and you might not even know that. Mm-hmm. Somebody might come in and swoop up and take up your land, and you don't even have any idea of it. And the reason why, I don't know, I guess I look at this problem with the foundations and these NGOs is a huge problem because we've never recognized what's going on. We've never recognized what's going on in our nation, period. I remember it was a big thing, the Johnson Amendment, 1954, talking about 501c3s couldn't be involved in political speak, right? Mm-hmm. And Johnson fundamentally put that in there to silence the church.
Mm-hmm.
It's always been used as preachers say, well, we can't talk about politics because we'll lose our 501c3 status.
Right.
Correct?
Right.
But if you look at these foundations, they're 501c3, 501c4, and their whole involvement or their whole, you know, billions of dollars into the political speech.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And Bill, let's talk about that because people don't understand what tax-exempt organizations, NGOs, and foundations are all about. Now, when this country was founded, first of all, you're absolutely right. Very, very central to our system of government, to our constitutional republic, not democracy, was the idea that we would have rights to private property and rights to freedom of speech, of thought, of religion, of association. I mean, there's a whole number of things that are part of this. Now, take a look at what they've done with not only property rights, but then think about this. Property rights extend to your body, into your mind, and look at what they're doing with the thought police. What they're trying to vilify anyone who it doesn't want to be a progressive socialist. They're trying to identify them, and actually now they're talking about criminalizing that behavior if you happen to stand up for the Second Amendment or stand up for, let's say, the idea that we had a rigged election, which I think virtually everybody in this country by now at least has some recognition that happened. And you take a look at the universities, they have free speech zones. You don't have free speech. You have free speech zones because these young people are not allowed to really be classically liberally educated like our founders intended for this country to be. So anyway, I'm just bringing all that up because I want you to talk about it.
Well, I just think it's important. I think it's important to take a step back as I thought about this, is that, you know, the Bill of Rights, when they were writing the Constitution, and Madison was against the Bill of Rights, and he got Jefferson was in France, and he sent him 200 books saying, well, you have to, because Madison was under the belief if it didn't say the government could do it, you know, specifically in the Constitution, mm-hmm. Then they wouldn't and couldn't do it. And Jefferson said, no, you need defense of the people, specifically written in there. Because I listened to a guy the other day, and he was talking about, he says, well, I don't think government's evil. Well, I do think government's evil. I think that our founders believed government was evil. I believe our Constitution was written to restrain the passions of men, period. But that thin sheet of paper, you know, that Bill of Rights, if you go down, like as you were talking, whether it's, you know, freedom of religion, freedom of speech, freedom of press, freedom to gather, you know, your gun rights, you know, we can go on down that whole list of the Bill of Rights, and which one of them are not violated today, right? Mm-hmm. You're the Fourth Amendment, you're supposed to be safe in your person, your papers, your home, basically, without the due process of law. Well, that can't be when the Bush administration put in the Patriot Act and they collect every form of conversation, electronic conversation that you have. And then that takes away your Fifth Amendment right to remain silent. I mean, we could just go on mm-hmm. down. The point is we've lost all these things. And who have we lost them to? You know, we've been raised in this, our culture is right against left, when in mm-hmm. fact, that's just a way to divide people. There's no truth in either side. There's something mm-hmm. else that is controlling the political system, and it's not the Democrat or Republican Party. Would you agree?
Oh, absolutely. And then we get into the idea of the tax exempts and the NGOs. Mm-hmm. NGOs didn't exist prior to the UN. The right. UN actually created non-governmental organizations, which for the most part are tax exempt and so-called nonprofits, for one very specific purpose. They were to change the culture, to change the political and social culture of the world, and do it in a way that reflected that they were a grassroots movement, when in fact they were very specifically designed to transform society. And it was to transform society. Most people have at least an inkling that the UN is a socialist organization. Well, in fact, if you look at the formation of the UN, it's literally a poster child for Stalinist Russia, because Stalin influenced in the biggest way, including the delegates to the Dumbarton Oaks Conference that were the American delegates to the creation of the UN. They were all Soviet agents, or at least mostly Soviet agents. So, in fact, the UN was created to foster communism and socialism worldwide, and to promote it. And NGOs were created to be one of the vehicles to do that and hide as grassroots organizations. Is that right?
Yeah, well, the NGO, you got to look at it in light of NGO is non-governmental organization, and they were created to operate outside of government control. So if they're operating outside of government control, they're operating outside of sovereignty. And how many of these NGOs and nonprofits are registered with the UN? 5,500 of them. 5,500. And what do they become? Vast money laundering organizations.
Absolutely. That's what we're going to be talking about, is the fact that now foundations, tax-exempt foundations, are creation of the robber barons who figured out a way that they could hide all their, once they created income tax. We got to make sure that people understand the wealthiest in the world are the ones that pushed the banking system, the Federal Reserve system, and they also were the ones that pushed the income tax, because they recognized that they could get around paying the taxes and that they could force the middle class of America, who were growing rapidly, to be basically overcome with the taxation that ultimately would destroy the middle class, and it would leave us a two-caste system, the very, very poor and the very, very rich.
Well, let's look at that income tax, a progressive income tax. That's one of the 10 hallmarks of Marxist communism. Right. And we adopted that in 1913 with the 16th Amendment. So, right.
Which actually was never actually ratified.
Right.
Completely. I mean, there's a number of books about that.
Yeah. There's a big argument that it was never legally passed. Mm-hmm. I 100% agree with you. But the point is it's about a transfer of wealth. It's not about funding a government. It's funny because when I was at that same dinner, we were talking about taxes and income tax, and a lot of American people do not understand that there was not an income tax, that was part of the 16th Amendment in 1913. And this guy looks at me, and he's, I'm retired military. So he's like, well, how do we fund the, defense of our nation and the military, and, and I'm like, well, it isn't through taxes. Mm-hmm. That's through printing money because, we don't raise enough in taxes to fund all these things, and the American people don't understand all of this, and they don't understand that these nonprofit foundation NGOs, it's a way that they can transfer literally billions of dollars between each other to their posterity. Right? Can you pass down, if you had a $20 million cattle ranch, could you pass that off to your kids without it being taxed?
Only if you form a tax exempt foundation.
That's right. If you made a family foundation, you could do that. Otherwise, the government's going to come in and take half of it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, these people pass it between each other, from one foundation to another, whether it's the Buffett Foundation to the Gates Foundation to the, Rockefeller to the Ford, how many of these foundations? I think I counted up the Rockefeller, family has like 8 foundations.
Mm-hmm. And in fact, actually, if you get right down to it, Bill, because they've got foundations that set up foundations, and then those foundations set up other foundations. The whole network of the Rockefeller family, it's something like 400 different foundations that have spun off in part of the Rockefellers.
Hey, Dan.
Yes, sir.
Now, you and I talked about this. I did a show just the other day, my Saturday show, on corporations and how they got started all the way back in the early days of the Roman Empire. And the cities were first entities the Romans treated as corporations. Over time, the concept extended to certain community organizations called collegia. These included artisan associations, religious societies, and social clubs formed to provide funerals for members. Most Roman corporations served exclusively community or religious purposes. Of course, distinguishing public from private interests can be difficult. And there's a natural tension. Okay. But it goes on. It says, even Feed the Geese, they operated these NGOs. These were basically the earliest versions of a non-governmental organization, contractors. Mm-hmm. And eventually they became, they were given corporate status. And once they received, you know, became corporate status, you know, they were hired as contractors to build the aqueducts and things like that. Move it forward a couple of hundred, you know, a couple thousand years or however, you know, 500 years or whatever. And you have what we have today. And they had the same problem back then as we do now. Corruption and the collusion between the elites and the sovereigns who had the authority to offer them this corporate limited liability,
right?
And that, so this is an old problem. They just keep recycling it.
yeah. Well, and Thumper and Bill, they, one of the things that the American establishment political class are really the ones that created for-profit corporations. Prior to that, the founding fathers, they said that corporations could only exist for the public good. They could only exist for short periods of time. They were intended to build major public projects like a road system or forts or post offices, whatever, that were supposed to be for the public good. In 1870-71, John D. Rockefeller figured out that he could literally buy, and he did exactly that, buy the Delaware state legislature. And that's why so many corporations now are based in Delaware. It's because John D. Rockefeller literally bought the Delaware legislature so that they could create for-profit corporations. And all of a sudden, the whole dynamic changed because it went from being a public good thing to a very, very private thing. And that's how the robber barons, I mean, literally, we can see the transition of the United States start in the late 1800s and how that whole Marxist progressive whole thing is all kind of tied together. We're going to connect the dots in that.
Well, one last thing, and I'll jump out of here, was that, back in the early sailing days, and when you had the competition between different countries opening up the new world and the trade, the Hudson Bay Company, the East India Company, and all of these things. Did you realize that, you know, the pirates that they, you know, certain countries were hiring pirates to go after the merchant marine ships of other countries in order to shut down their trade routes. That was another form of non-governmental agency. Isn't it interesting that piratism Blackbird himself was an NGO, possibly.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, and I was going to mention the fact that the English were the most notorious for doing that.
Oh, yeah.
To try to shut down the Spanish international trade.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right.
Bill, come on. We need to get Bill back in.
Not at all, because I think this is all important because it lays a foundation of understanding for people. You know, when I was a young man in the 70s, they talked about Trilateral Commission and global control and, you know, all that. And we thought, well, that's kind of crazy talk. And but we've moved well past that today. It was David Rockefeller's book. This was a quote. It said, this was a quote from him. He said, Some even believe that we are part of a secret cabal working against the best interests of the United States, characterizing my family and me as internationalists and of conspiring with others around the world to build a more integrated global political and economic structure, one world, if you will. If that's the charge, I stand guilty and am proud of it. Mm-hmm. Think about that comment in his biography that he wrote, that he says he's working against the best interests of the United States. Now think about this network of foundations that literally can move billions of dollars into political venues around the world, mm-hmm. but mm-hmm. you know, within our country. And we look at this last presidential election as a huge anomaly to freedom in our country. But how long has this been going on?
Right.
I mean, the truth is that Trump won an overwhelming victory of which they couldn't hide. They mm-hmm. couldn't hide. But they have reached such a pinnacle of power that they can look at you and they can look at the three of us and say, hey, listen, we're going to elect two of the most incompetent people our nation has ever seen, and there's nothing you can do about it.
Mm-hmm.
Would you agree?
Well, didn't they do that with the Obama administration, though?
What's that?
Yeah, the black and the transgender. They just shoved it right in our face, didn't they?
Yeah, well, it doesn't matter. They are telling and they're dictating to us through these foundations that basically control both the Democrat and Republican Party and everybody elected there. I mean, mm-hmm. would you agree or disagree that we no longer have a representative government?
No, no question. We don't. Yeah.
I mean, there's nobody from my state, you know, statewide, you know, that represents my concerns or that's even going to stand up for the Constitution. That's the only defense that I have as a citizen that our founders gave us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was interesting because I just got back from a week in Texas, and Texas has a no mask mandate. There were more masks on people in Texas than any place I've seen in the mm-hmm. in our nation.
The sheeple are the problem, and I hate to say it, but the sheeple are the problem. I'm in Arizona. We got the same thing down here. You go into a store and everybody's walking around with their face diaper on and looking like a bunch of idiots. And all I can think is, you poor people, why are you so stupid? And they look at me like I'm some kind of a jerk because I won't wear the damn thing.
Yeah, they look at me like I'm passing disease, but this gets back to your thought police kind of things. They've already taught us that if I have an open mouth, I'm somehow passing disease. That's mm-hmm. that's what people think. And they look at you if you don't have it on like, you know, I'm killing people. Mm-hmm. It's another venue for pitting one against the other. I know you're going to have Dr. Sherry Tenpenny.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
the most brilliant woman I've heard, and the reason why I bring it up because it all ties in. Because what we have to understand with these foundations and the amount of power and influence and the UN that they have is that we're in an asymmetric battle, right? Mm-hmm. There's not a one front battle. I mean, they're coming at us with the COVID. They're coming at us with the elections. They're coming at us in the school system. They're coming at us with Black Lives Matter. They're coming out with transgender and you know, homosexual, mm-hmm. whatever agenda, you know, and then they're trying to paint you into a corner of what you believe or don't believe. And they're trying to prevent you from even thinking about the truth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're trying to force people. They're the thought police. They're trying mm-hmm. to force people to take positions so they can identify their enemies, number one. That's what they want to do. They want to identify their enemies, and then they want to so intimidate most people who are scared to death of being identified as being a troublemaker,
yep,
or identified as being out of step with the rest of society. I mean, Bill, you and I have talked about this many times, but would you have believed that we would have created that Americans would be the kind of culture that would be so damn gutless and stupid that they would go along with this stuff?
Well, to me, it's astounding. In 05 and 06, I was a battalion commander in the Sunni Triangle in Iraq, and we were there to give the Iraqis the first fair vote or first legitimate election that they've ever had. Mm-hmm. Probably remember the purple ink and the, yep, you know, on their fingers, yep, right? And so we were getting shot at, mortared, rocketed, IED'd every day to be on the street to give them a fair election. Who would have thought that we don't even have an elected senator or congressman that'll stand up against stand up for our constitutional rights? And they said there was some kind of insurrection out of the Capitol, like they were worried that something was actually going to happen to, but they're the same people that will send our men and women overseas, you know, third world countries to give them a fair election.
To die in defense of their free elections. Right. And meanwhile, that's the whole, I guess that's a whole dichotomy of the thing right now. And that's why we're having this great conversation, because Americans have believed. Now, we did the Lee Greenwood song at the beginning of this thing, and I'm proud to be American because at least I know I'm free. In fact, we don't know that at all, but it sounds great and it's very patriotic. And that's one of the reasons that we're doing what we're doing, why we have these conversations, because we want to be free.
Right.
And we're willing to give our lives to be free.
I would argue we aren't free anymore. Like this thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
This cell phone. What's going on in China with social scores?
Credit. Right? Yeah, absolutely. Social credit. They've got to carry that thing with them everywhere they go. And it literally monitors them day and night.
Well, and you know, that's what's going to happen here too, right?
It's already happening here.
Right. Well, yeah, it is, but...
And Thumper will come in on that one, but it's been in the insurance industry for at least a dozen years.
Oh, yeah. The insurance industry adopted what they call your insurance score about 10 years ago. I've been in the insurance industry for 30 years. I just sold my business last year as a insurance independent agent broker, all right, here in Spokane. And Progressive Insurance started it. Go figure. And they are using all kinds of publicly available information, you know, through TransUnion, ChoicePoint, you know, all these credit agencies. But they're also going in and they're and all these different so-called credit reporting agencies are also mining public databases. And now they're using ways of going out and searching into the internet to find out what is your internet experience. I own the agency. I wrote my policy for my homeowners through Travelers Insurance. My homeowners came in a year ago, almost doubled what it had been. I called them up and I said, "What in the hell are you doing?" They said, "Oh, well, we found your name out on the dark web." Really? Okay. And if you are paying attention right now, homeowners rates are skyrocketing. Mm-hmm. You know, check your, you know, when your policy comes up for renewal, watch your homeowners rates. They're going through the roof right now. Mine went up another $1,000 this year. All right. My homeowners went from $1,000 to now it's $3,000 and some a year. And it's absolutely ridiculous. And some of it is because I do this, mm-hmm, and supposedly this qualifies for the dark web and I'm getting financially, you know, hit on that. I have over an 800 credit score. All right. And, they are using information that, you know, maybe some website I went to do some research on the stuff that I talk about on Patriot Soapbox here. That's being held against me. I've seen it. It's been building and all the insurance companies are doing it. It's when I was in the business, up until last year, we called it black box underwriting. I put in the name and the address and all this other stuff, and they have their, you know, they contract through Choice Point, TransUnion, all these credit reporting agencies that are mining all these different databases to find out as much information about you as possible. And then they give that to the insurance company. The insurance company puts it in their little black box, and they use that in order to come up with your insurance rate based on that score. And it's, you know, it's all kinds of different things. And because it is a proprietary algorithm that they're using, you don't really know what it is they're actually using to base your score on. Now the insurance commissioner, they have to apply all this stuff up to the insurance commissioner's office to be able to, have their policies in Washington state anyway, approved to the Washington state insurance commissioner's office before they can use them. They have to file it. And then the, but you know, we have a heavy duty Democrat insurance commissioner have for years. They haven't seen a rate increase they don't like. Social scoring is alive and well, and it's on every insurance policy you buy. Has been for 10 years, at least.
Yeah, and most of these apps, it's interesting talking to people about the apps that you have on their phones that will record your GPS location 14,000 times in one day and report it to third parties. Mm-hmm. I mean, the point is Dan, when you say that, you know, land of the free, home of the brave, are we there?
Yeah, we aren't. And we know that. Yeah.
Right. So the question, you know, we've got these foundations that have global interests. They want to remove all sovereignty, national sovereignty. They want to control all population, all people. I mean, this COVID-19 thing is probably the most astounding thing that I've seen in my lifetime. Mm-hmm. That the American people will line up and do. I mean, think about this. There is nothing the government could do if we just said no. We don't have to pick up torches mm-hmm. and pitchforks or nothing. We just say no.
But there's got to be enough people doing that it makes a difference. And that's what absolutely. The problem is. We need to get people off the couch and get them to stand up and have a backbone.
I 100% agree. But I think, you know, I'm not sure I know what the answer is, but I think you asked me before, you know, or we talked before, even when with Rick Jordan stuff, we said, well, what's the solution to the political problem? Well, the where we start is that we have to divorce ourselves from Democrat and Republican parties. Mm-hmm. We have to divorce ourselves from supporting foundations. All these things that are designed to control people.
We need to be smart about where we shop, because keep in mind that so many of these foundations are getting all their money because we're paying them. You take a look at the Ford Foundation. You know, you go out and buy a Ford car or a Ford truck, and, you know, Henry Ford would be rolling in his grave if he knew what was going on with the foundations. Because the fact is that the Ford Foundation is one of the most liberal social justice and all this other nonsense organization in the entire world.
Well, and almost all these foundations, if you peel the onion back, almost all largely support abortion and population control globally.
Big time.
That's their big bent. I mean, you look at the Bill Gates, who, you know, he says it. It's not, this is nothing hidden. He says, well, we can reduce the population of the globe by 14 or 15% through vaccinations. Mm-hmm. Through vaccinations. So we have this guy that can't remove viruses from his computer programs, but he's going to remove viruses from the world by vaccinating us.
With sterilants, yeah.
Yes, yeah, it has mm-hmm. absolutely, you know, I mean, and this is through these big foundations. I mean, hundreds of millions of dollars spent, and I'm probably, you know, doing a little frequency hop and going all the way for these foundations to control the way you think, to get people to line up to take an experimental vaccine that hasn't even been tested on animals, and they'll have a terrible adverse reaction from the first shot. And as soon as they get out of the hospital, because they were hospitalized, are looking for that second shot from something that you have 99% survival rate from.
If I could toss something in here, I was reading I know Dan, you probably are familiar with Anna von Reitz.
Yeah.
Okay. She came out with a letter just yesterday, and she brought up an interesting point. Okay. You can't patent something that's natural. Right. And, what are these people famous for? They're famous for, creating the straw man, and then under admiralty law, you've heard that whole story with the birth certificate and all that. All right. If they take this mRNA vaccine and it modifies your DNA, now are you patentable?
Right. Right.
Okay. And they can lay claim to the your DNA because they created
modified it.
And they modified it, and now they can patent it and they own you. That was something that Anna brought up in her letter just yesterday.
Well, and they actually have a precedent for that, because they've done it in the Midwest. Organizations like Cargill and the big
they've done it with plants.
Yeah, that have experimented with plants and have modified plants through genetic engineering. They can go in and plant a crop in a field, and if somehow some of the seed blows over and into the adjoining neighbor's field, they can sue him for using their product without them collecting money for it, even though he had nothing to do with it. And they've done it. They've won those cases in court. So the reality is, once they genetically modify something, then you're right. They can patent it, and they can actually control all use of it, whether it's intentional or not.
Scary, huh?
You know what's even more scary to me is that there's been, don't quote me on these exact numbers because they might be a little bit out of date, but, close to a couple thousand deaths from this vaccine, over 40,000 adverse reactions. Now, what would be on the market still, of any product, but our Congress, this gets back to this whole foundation political thing, right? Our Congress passed a law that exempted pharmaceutical companies from liability of their products.
Right. Yeah. And they did that. And they've never touched that again. And they can put any damn thing in your arm, and if it kills you, tough luck.
Right. I mean, I look at the coronavirus, right? When that came out, I told somebody, I said, well, that's a bioweapon. They said, oh, you can't say this stuff. You can't prove it. And I can't prove it from sitting here in Montana, but I said, trust me, it's a bioweapon. And then you look and you connect the dots of what else was going on in Wuhan, China. Where did they test the 5G system?
Right.
10,000 towers in Wuhan, China. Mm-hmm. Are they connected? I don't know. I'm not a rocket surgeon.
I'd be more than happy to explore that with you, Bill, because I'm right with your thought train on that one.
Yeah. Because I've read the Bible a number of times, and because I was an intelligence officer, I don't believe in coincidences at all.
Right.
Every now and then an anomaly happens in the world, but I said, everything that you see is by design.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look at these tax-free foundations that can transfer money wherever they want in the world, in the form of, we know that they have influenced elections from 2006 to, I think, 14, I think it was $2.4 billion, just in electioneering.
Mm-hmm.
What laws are they changing that are taking away your rights?
In this last election, Time Magazine wrote a great article on it, Bill, openly not just admitting, but they were actually bragging about the impact of the tax-exempt foundations, the NGOs, the groups who were putting money into the election process and swung the election. And they put the social media in that group as kind of number one on the list. Now, think about this. America is suffering from all the problems that we've got that we are paying for. Bill, you and I, as taxpayers, we are paying for all these problems, and yet at the same time they're getting a free ride and they're reshaping our whole culture.
100% agree. I mean, I like you know, I had the red, white, and blue tattooed on my heart, and I would say that I still do, but after three tours with OIF, I started saying, you know, this stuff isn't right. Mm-hmm. And we look if you just look at wars from 2001, from 9/11, right? 20 years of war. That's probably been the largest transfer of wealth that the world has ever seen.
Mm-hmm. Well, and Bill, I have to say, you and I attended together the 9/11 Truth group with
Gates.
Gates and or Gage, I'm sorry. And
Gage, that's right.
Richard Gage. And we had him on here a week or so ago, and we talked about it. But, you know, you as a military intelligence officer, as a true patriot to America, and I, man, you're one of the most patriotic guys I know. I have to tell you, I just I love the way you think. You're one of the best friends I've ever had because you are such a good man. All I can say is that when you become a 9/11 truther and you recognize the fact that this whole thing is a big scam, that's a big deal. And it isn't just you. There's a heck of a lot of people in the military. You know, Cedar West, you know Cedar real mm-hmm. well. Cedar is a good friend of mine who is a 30-year, he was a Marine pilot, an F-4 pilot, and then he became an airline pilot for American Airlines and retired from American Airlines after 30 years of doing that. He watched, I gave him a copy of 9/11 Truth. He watched it and he said, you know, there's no way you can refute it. It's there. I mean, it happened. And then people say, well, why would they do such a thing? Well, guess what? Take a look at the Patriot Act. That's pretty easy to see why they did it.
Well, I think the problem, and this gets back to, you know, my original thesis is the world has changed, and the United States in particular has changed, and we haven't recognized that. And most people will not let their thought process go that far. Mm-hmm. Because we have to understand that there is an evil out there. There's a good and there's an evil, and they're in constant turmoil and constant battle. And that, you know, according to the Bible, Satan came to steal, to kill, and destroy. But as American people, we don't think that happens in our country. And we cannot look at tax-exempt foundations that supposedly do good for the nation, do good for people, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Maybe you can find the good. I can't.
Yeah, very little. They do just enough good to be able to get away with all the bad that they're doing under the cover of darkness.
Right. But if this a Johnson Amendment in 1954 applied to churches, how come it doesn't apply to foundations?
Absolutely.
Who's going to enforce it? It would be mm-hmm. my question.
Yeah.
Well, certainly not Congress. Certainly not our FBI.
The IRS.
The IRS. And this is all in there. You can look in their tax forms, their 990 forms, and see that they are funding and supporting political agendas.
Absolutely. Well, you sent me a video, and it was Unshackled Minds, the sequel to The Fall of the Cabal, Part 7. And I did watch that, Bill. Fascinating. People need to, in fact, we need to advertise that a little bit, because People need to understand just exactly how big the numbers were that went into the 2020 election. I mean, we're talking like $6 billion that went into the shaping of the election and literally the changing of the election. And it was done in so many different ways.
Yeah, my question, the thing that I've really been wrestling with is, and as long as you've known me, I've been an independent guy, political party independent, because I've always believed that both of them were corrupt and about the destruction. I don't think we can solve this through the political parties.
No, I don't either. I've given up on.
But I think that we can. I think we can give people hope if we have focused people running. We've talked over the years about private property ownership and freedom of speech and sound money and different things that if people really understood what was going on, I think they would change their focus. I think they would change their vote. I think they'd change who they supported and why.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's really important that we take this, we look and we understand the foundations and that they really are controlling the political processes in our country. I think.
Mm-hmm.
Do you agree?
Oh, absolutely. They are literally, and you talk about millions of dollars and even billions of dollars, but actually, Bill, it's trillions of dollars that these foundations have put into the whole movement to a one world socialist Marxist totalitarian technocratic government.
Yep.
It's trillions of dollars. And what they've done is that they've created so many of these foundations, and they are so politically active now in shaping what the American people see. We've been the target because what it is they need to change our perceptions. That's how they've accomplished what they've done. They've changed our perceptions. How have they done it? Well, they demonize anybody who stands up and says, wait a minute, something wrong here. I don't like this. They've demonized anybody who stands up and says, wait a minute, we don't need to be part of the New World Order. We need to be Americans. Mm. We can do a lot better that way. Everything that they've done has been a shape-changing operation.
Yep.
It's like the movie about the shape changers. They morph into all these things in all these areas where they can control the dialogue. They can control the direction. They can control how we think and shape the political discussion. And they've done a terrific job of it.
Well, and I get back to why I think that COVID and all this is tied in together is because there's one social organization that has the power to shape and change our nation pretty quickly. And I would say that's the Christian church. The church is a place where people will gather together in fellowship and friendship and you could have the biggest impact on the nation through Sunday church than anything else. Well, so COVID came by and we're going to shut down church because, mm-hmm. We might kill people. And then we aren't going to worship God because, and we go on and on and on. And what they're doing is breaking down the cultural norm, which is that the people seek God in times of despair.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to take that away from you. What we want you to do is seek government in times of despair, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We're going to give you a $2,000 or we're going to give you a $600. We're going to give you whatever. And, mm-hmm. We're going to vaccinate you and we go on and on down the list that government is here to protect you.
Mm-hmm.
There has never been a time in my life or in your life when the government showed up and they showed up and said, we're here to help you, that you believed that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, it's like Ronald Reagan said, government is not the solution, it's the problem.
100%.
And it's always been that way. It's always been that way. But, you know, you mentioned the closing the churches. At the same time, they left the strip clubs and the porn palaces and all this other crap wide open.
Yeah. Well, they left everything open. I mean, Black Lives Matter, or, you know, can protest and burn. And, you know, we can go on down this whole list. If it had nothing to do at all with controlling an outbreak of a pandemic that didn't exist. Mm-hmm. What it had to do is, I'm going to break down this social norm in which, you know, let's face it, the revolution started in the churches. The American Revolution mm-hmm. started in the churches, right?
That's
the
Black
Rule Regiments and all the people that, you know, that this is where we're going to go, and it influenced the people, at least influenced enough people to stand up and do something about it. What mm-hmm. happens when we take the church out of the loop? And then you look at Germany, you know, the church. I don't know if you ever read Bonhoeffer.
I've got it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But, you know, the same thing is they took really the church out of society. It was the Reich. It was the government. It had nothing to do with the unity of, you know, with God and a creator, which is extremely important because recognize that there is God recognizes that there is an ultimate accountability for your actions.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And that also recognizes that man is inherently evil,
yeah,
which
absolutely.
Is the antithesis of what the social control freaks are all about.
That's right. That's right. You know, if you look at secular humanism, you know, man can be good without God. Well, God says right in Genesis after he flooded the world, and he said, man's heart's evil from birth, mm-hmm. right? We are evil. Socially, man can control them. The most powerful government in the whole world is self-government.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And the point is Christianity gives us a base, a foundation that has never changed. It hasn't changed by the applause of man. It hasn't changed by popular culture. God didn't change what he said. But now what we're going to do is we're going to shape the church culture. We're going to shape people. We're going to close the door of churches. And how many of those people will never go back to that fellowship?
Right, right.
How many of them will never? And so what you're doing is you're continuing to divide people to talk mm-hmm. about real issues.
Well, and the social distancing thing. See, that's yep. part of it. Yep. You got to wear your little face diaper. You got to wear your mask, and you got to stand 6 feet apart minimum. Okay. They're killing the interaction of people that's absolutely essential for an advanced society.
Right. But let's talk a second about the, this is speculation on my part, but I think pretty honest, fair speculation. Why 6 feet apart?
Well, let's hear. I want to hear what you think.
Okay, if you and I are standing, you know, a foot apart, right? And I am geolocating Dan Happel. Mm-hmm. And I've never seen your face, but I know because I've been tracking you on social media that I want you. And Bill Coate and Dan Happel are standing right next together. And our only identifier, our only electronic signature is our phone number. Right?
Yeah.
I can't differentiate within a foot or 2 feet. I have to have some separation. This is speculation on my part, but what do you think? Like if I have 6 foot separation, I got 3 feet, and you look at a GPS and they'll give you like 3 feet of accuracy.
If I can toss in here,
yeah.
Do you know how many sensors are in your phone, Bill?
No, I don't even want.
There's 18 different sensors in your phone there. They can without your approval, they can get your heart rate, how much you're sweating, your pulse, oxygen level, respiration, all of those things. There's 18 different sensors in that phone. One of our guys here is a He worked for a big telecom, installing a bunch of 5G stuff early on, and they had him. They wanted he was asking questions about his crews and working around this 5G stuff that is at waist level, interestingly enough, and he was concerned about his ability to father children and along with his workers, and so they asked him to do a white paper on it and submit it to the company. He did. And 2 days later, they escorted him out of the company and said, see ya. And what he found was horrendous. But and in his once he got let go, he was really ticked off. And they basically lit his fuse. And he's been doing nothing but looking at all of this 5G technology and your telephone. These wonderful little telephones, you know, they can actually map your room. There's an infrared piece of the camera that sends infrared a grid of infrared little dots all around any room that you're in, and they can actually map the room using that infrared information. And
what's in that room?
Everything in it, down to the coffee cup and the Smith & Wesson 40 cal you got sitting on the table next to you, you know. it's out there. They don't talk about it, obviously, but they can do that. These phones are incredibly and so much of it is more or less it's passive in a way. It just sits there and mm-hmm. just kind of looks around and snoops around, and then they can glean all that information. They can identify you biometrically. They don't have to have your phone, your facial recognition or anything. They don't have to have your phone number. All they have to do is be able to pick up your phone, and then they can identify Dan through your phone biometrically. He has his phone. They've already collected that, and they have identified his mm-hmm. biometrics to his phone, his wife's biometrics, anybody that's around him. It's all being collected.
Yeah, it's absolutely the most dangerous thing that we possess. And I often say that if a guy wants to make a lot of money, he's going to get a communications device that's free of GPS location, and the only thing it does is allow you to communicate and nothing else.
Well, yeah, just kind of let you know, you and I have some, you know, you were working with the Intel community and in the Marine Corps. I was 14 years in the Navy, and I was a aviation electronics technician on P3s. And it wasn't the submarine hunting P3s. Let's just leave it at that.
That's called the EP3.
Interestingly enough, well, you know, the one that the one that landed on Tinian Island. I've flown many missions on that airplane before that happened. But that's one of my old platforms that I used to. I put a lot of hours on that bird. So when it comes to this kind of stuff, I do understand what the capabilities are.
Yeah, I understand it very much, because that was my specialty.
Okay. We're on the same, talking the same stuff here.
And we give all this information freely, and it's passed out to all these third party organizations. Mm-hmm. Have no idea who owns what. Can I tell you a really quick story? Kind of just a funny one. Not funny, sure. Haha, but funny, strange. So I was a company as a young, I was a captain in the Marine Corps, company commander. And we in the Marine Corps, we'd send out platoons that go on Marine expeditionary units for 6 month floats, and had two young guys, two Lance Corporals. And this would have been in the early 90s when they started DNA collection. And they refused to do DNA collection. And eventually, you know, I had to administratively separate them from the Marine Corps, because, you know, it became a rule, a law, that you had to have DNA. And they said, no, we're not doing it. And I'm like, well, why not? And they said, well, first it was, you know, dental, and then it was your fingerprints and all that was just going to be within the military. And he says, everybody has all that information now. When they do DNA, everybody's going to have that information, and they refused and they got out. And I have admired those two young men since that time. Their conviction, and they were 100% correct. Like, who has your DNA? Where can your DNA end up? Right. Mm-hmm. It's a funny story, but you know, it's all these things and these processes, and there's a global, when we talk about foundations, we have to talk about them in light of it's global. This is not a U.S. Only kind of thing. It's about mm-hmm. global control of a global population. I mean, David Rockefeller says right there, it's an international cabal and it works against, I mean, how can you, it works against the best interests of the United States. And mm-hmm. we as a people are supporting and defending foundations that are working against the best interests of the United States.
Yeah. Well, Bill, I have to bring something into that since we got that discussion going. David Rockefeller was in communist China. He wrote a piece, and I don't have the direct quote here, but not only defending, but talking about how Mao Zedong had created a superior society, and how much David Rockefeller not only respected, but really looked to Mao as a blueprint for how the world should operate. He was over there, and two months later, Richard Nixon started the process of normalizing relations with communist China. I mean, it didn't get any better than that. And of course, you know that Kissinger, and you'll have pardon me for saying this, but I refer to him as Kissassinger, was the personal secretary to Nelson Rockefeller. He was his personal secretary. He was his right-hand man in the early 60s. Kissassinger ended up being the guy that went over and started normalization with communist China and Richard Nixon. And then, of course, we understand, we remember what happened when Spiro Agnew was booted out as vice president under Richard Nixon. And guess who ultimately ended up replacing him? Nelson Rockefeller. I mean, it doesn't get any better than this. You know, you don't have to make this stuff up. This is like the most diabolical mystery novel in the world is the truth. Because David Rockefeller, his brother Nelson Rockefeller, who is also the architect of the new global, the new world constitution, okay? This is all part of the same group of people who now, through their tax-exempt foundations, and even though David Rockefeller is dead, incidentally, I don't know if most people know this, but he had his, when he died, they took his brain out and they cryogenically froze it so they can put it in another body. I mean, this guy, it doesn't get any weirder than the Rockefellers.
Yeah, here's another one of his quotes, though, that I think is, you know, just take these people for what they say, mm-hmm. right? It says, the supranational sovereignty of an intellectual elite and world bankers is surely preferable to the national autodetermination practiced in the past centuries.
Mm-hmm.
Well, why do we not take these people at their word?
Right, right. And that was reported at the Bilderberger Conference in 1992.
Yeah.
Same time that UN Agenda 21 was going into full swing.
Yeah, people, when you talk about UN Agenda 21, and Dan, you were the one that enlightened me to it, you know, people act like you should pop on the old tinfoil hat, and I'm like, well, just read it. It's there. They're saying this. You know, why does Bill Gates, the Bill and Melinda Foundation, why are they the largest farmland owners in the United States today? Mm-hmm. Is that some kind of accident?
Mm-hmm. Well, the plan is, as far as what I've been able to glean out, Bill, is that they're, if you look at a legislation that was just passed in Nevada, where they are going to allow these corporations, okay, that's what started me down that little corporate path I've been taking for the last couple of weeks. They're going to come in and they're going to build smart cities on these large tracts of land, and they are going to allow them almost complete sovereignty, much like Washington, D.C. is a federal enclave. It's set apart from the United States. It has its own rules, its own laws, its own courts, political structure, the whole works. And what these smart cities are going to do, if you want to live there, you're going to live under their rules, their laws, their courts, everything about it. And what they're going to do is they're going to try to draw in all these people that want to, be technologically advanced, whether that be through gene therapy or, the bionic
transhumanism.
Man. Yeah. Transhumanism. Mm-hmm. Is where they're going with this. And in order for you to work and function in that city, you'll basically have to be connected to the city through technology embedded in you. And you can imagine what would happen if you had a bunch of people that are, I mean, there's people out there that are just salivating at the idea of getting their, $6 million man bionic eyeball. Mm. They will do it. They're just crazy enough and wacko enough to do it. And imagine a city like that with a bunch of crazy wackos like that competing against a normie city. Okay. And that's the whole idea. But Nevada passed a bill allowing them to be able to, and they had to, there were certain stipulations. There had to be a certain amount of land. They had to have a certain amount of money that only somebody like Bill Gates would have in order to build this thing out. And then they had to guarantee like $10 billion future investment into that city and all kinds of stuff. But they could set their own tax rates, their own laws. They're basically, you have a little fiefdom that's completely separate of the United States of America. Hmm. And Nevada passed the law, and that's where people like Bill Gates and these people are going, buying up these huge, massive tracts of land. Not to mention, the farmland that they will have control of, and also be able to control what kind of crops are grown, whether they be GMO, non-GMO, It's but all as very, a, very concerning.
Yeah, as a thinking human being, how can you not start questioning what they're doing, what their purpose is, and what their plan is? And it's not good for humanity. I mean, you can't. How can you trust a man that says he's going to reduce world population by 14-15% through vaccinations?
Well, if he's going to use a virus, Microsoft knows about viruses.
That's right.
They don't know how to keep them out, but they sure know how to let them in, don't they?
They know how to spread them, right?
Yeah, no kidding.
Well, and Bill, I have to tell you, he says 14%, but they openly admit they want to get rid of 93% of the world's population. I mean, all these things are going on right now that the whole process is part of a literally a culling of the herd, and they plan to do it in any way they can get away with it. Now, people say, well, this, that's just crazy stuff. Well, why would they go and put, and I'm talking big foundations and big corporations, put all this money into BLM and Antifa and all these groups that are rioting and creating all the racial unrest and all the rest of this stuff to try to get all of us fighting one another? Why would they do that? Well, they do that because they want to call the herd. You know, the more that we kill ourselves, kill each other, the fewer that they have to get blamed for doing it.
Well, and the easier it is to sell, you know, through legislative fiat to sell security over freedom.
Yeah, gun control and all the rest. See, they'll say, well, look at all these people that are being killed. They planned it that way. Now they take away our guns, and then you want to see the big kill. Wait till they take away our Second Amendment rights to protect ourselves.
Right. And so
then you'll see the big kill, because then they'll start putting us in the cattle cars and hauling us off to the gulags.
And that brings up a good question about representative government. You know, being here from Montana, are we going to become a sanctuary state for Second Amendment? I mean, some states have actually actively gone out and done that, which I applaud them for. Mm-hmm. But is the state of Montana going to do that?
Well, and you know, I hate to say it, Bill, you and I have watched this process. You and I have been at the legislature together in the past. And Montana has this reputation as being this rock solid conservative bunch of free will people. Have you ever seen a bigger bunch of snakes and goofballs in your life than the elected officials in the state of Montana?
A bigger bunch of cowards.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I mean, it's like what? I don't know. I just, to me,
I mean, don't get me wrong. There's some great ones up there, but you and I both know that the ones at the top of the heap are anything. They're, again, this goes back to what Dr. Shiva said. People are being selected, not elected, to leadership positions throughout our country. They're always the ones that'll play along with the game. I mean, there's a thing about Gianforte now. Do you know that he was one of the big, he signed on to one of these international programs that are promoting green societies? He's actually one of the sponsors on that group.
Oh, but if you have that, send it to me. I call him Global Greg.
Yeah, Global Greg. Yeah,
you know, I haven't seen anybody defending my constitutional rights is my problem. You know what I mean? Well, we can differ in a lot of things, but protect my constitutional rights. And if you aren't doing that, then you're not representing me.
Well, we get sucked into this thing, and I did it myself. I supported Gianforte because he told us what he was going to do and how he was going to protect our rights, and he was going to do all this stuff. And the option was Bullock. Well, you know, we're constantly given this choice between bad and worse. And so we always end up voting for bad because worse looks so much worse. And so what happens? We just constantly watch this dynamic shifting us from right to left, from right to left. And it's constant. You take a look at the voting record of Daines and Gianforte. They were awful. They were dismal. The New American published they do their voters index every couple of times a year, and every year for sure. And they had Gianforte and Daines in there, and they look like Democrats. Gianforte was like a 30% and Daines was like 31. Yep. I mean, it's just ridiculous.
Yep. I 100% agree with you. And that's why that's the evil of the two-party system is like, you know, people, Americans got to understand that. So what? So what if you have two parties, you know, a third party or an individual, the right individual running doesn't have to get 51% to win. He might only need to get 35. And the point is that we have a moral obligation to support the Constitution. And if you're not going to support the Constitution, you're not going to get my vote. Because the Constitution is that thin sheet of paper that separates me from government control. Mm-hmm. That's it. That's all there is. You know, and it's not about getting in gunfights, and it's not about getting in fist fights. It's about standing up and doing the right thing. And we have to call it the way it is. Mm-hmm. And my question is, what are you doing to protect or expand my freedom? Nothing. It's like Gianforte said he was going to remove the mask mandate. Mm-hmm. What did he do when he got in?
Did the same thing, just right. Like Bullock.
It was Bullock 2.0. And then he said, okay, we removed the mask mandate and it's up to the local county health department mm-hmm. officials. So where has the mask mandate been removed? Mm-hmm. By our governor or by our mm-hmm. government? It hasn't. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, it's only it's people like you and me that refuse to wear the damn thing are the ones that are the only ones enforcing it.
That's right. I get thrown out of places. I don't get in a big mm-hmm. argument or anything, you know. But you know, I served my country for 30 years. Mm-hmm. You know, and you're not going to take away my freedom for something that flat out doesn't work. I mean, the whole mask thing is so bizarre to me. My wife being a nurse and orders medical supplies for their clinic, and it says right on there, will not stop coronavirus. Mm-hmm. We have this guy, Fauci, who's, what can you say about a guy who says no masks don't work and then, well, one mask works and then maybe two masks and then maybe, you know, I mean, mm-hmm. well, how could you listen to someone as double-minded as that?
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I have to tell you guys, this is kind of funny, but it was on the news this morning, Tucson. Krispy Kreme and Dunkin' Donuts are going to give you a free donut if you go stand in line and get your shot. Okay? I mean, that's how mindless this crap is. And there's people out there that'll say, oh, good, I can go get a Krispy Kreme or a Dunkin' Donut if I kill myself and sterilize myself.
Well, Dan, this is the part that I don't understand. What is the point? I mean, have you ever in your life seen this much pressure for a vaccination of any kind?
Absolutely not. I mean, that's why I'm so adamantly opposed to it. You know, absolutely. What it boils down to, and now they're talking, you can't travel, you can't do anything if you don't get your vaccine. Well, guess what? That's why I ultimately ended up in Montana anyway. You've been up to my place. You know how yep. far isolated we are. You know, we've been watching this crap happen, this dynamic happen for a long time. We might as well at least live somewhere where we don't have to put up with this crap if we don't want to.
Yeah, I 100%. I think the fire has to start somewhere in our country. The fire mm-hmm. for freedom. I don't know where it's going to start. I don't know. I saw the other day where was it Arizona that the Senate said they're going to recount all the votes there, hand mm-hmm. break out them.
Mm-hmm. Maricopa County. Yeah.
Yeah, it might be a place where a fire starts when people realize the evil that has been done to them. Most people just don't, they can't fathom that evil is being done to them by their government.
Well, in Arizona and Maricopa County, guess what? They've decided, the legislature's decided that because they still have a Republican legislature. Mm-hmm. But Maricopa County, the county commissioners are refusing to allow them to have access to the ballots. God only knows if they're even still there. They're supposed to keep them for 2 years by law, but they may not even be there. And now they're having to go through the process of doing a recall election against the county commissioners in Maricopa County so they can get access to those ballots. I mean, this is just unbelievable, the kind of crap that we're having to go through. And again, I don't want to get too far off base here. It goes back to the money that's been put into this whole process by NGOs, tax-exempt foundations, and so-called nonprofits.
Well, and you know, these people, even on the front end of them, most of this stuff are being paid off by somebody.
It kind of reminds you of the movie Spaceballs when he goes, let's go to ludicrous speed.
I love it.
I look at like Zuckerberg putting $450 million into the election. Like tax-free, you know what I mean?
I'm just and bragging about it and getting away with it. Yeah.
And there's no accountability. There's zero accountability. You know, because they're all getting paid off. Everybody's got, you know, their hand in that money jar somewhere along that chain. And I just laugh. I had that court case against the state of Montana, the dark money thing about freedom of speech. That went up to the Supreme Court that, you know, got turned down at the Supreme Court, but that was 4 years in the making, you know, in that little state of Montana, less than a million people, kind of blah, blah, blah. The government could shut down, freedom of speech through political donations, what you could say and what you can't say. Well, where's the First Amendment to the Constitution? You know, where does it say that the government can decide how much money or who can give to what or who can say, or, you know, where does it say that? It does. It certainly doesn't restrict the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, the Rockefellers, the Buffetts, the Ford. You know, we'll just go on down the list of people that have filtered billions of dollars to the political processes of our country with zero accountability. Not one of them has been held accountable for it.
And not only have not been held accountable, but they get the freedom to do all this stuff without paying taxes to their to the system that allows them to do that.
Well, is it treasonous to say that you're working against the best interests of the United States?
One would think.
You would think. But when he was still alive and he publishes his memoirs that say that. I don't know. I mean, where's our Federal Bureau of Investigation?
It's gone.
Where's our DOJ?
Yeah. It's gone. Terry Turchie. Bill, did you get a chance to see the program we did with Terry Turchie? He's a former FBI. He was one of the guys that headed the counterterrorism unit with the FBI back in the 90s. Okay. He's actually the guy that was responsible for catching the Unabomber. Okay. He was right at the top of the food chain. He says the FBI right now is the most corrupt organization, that law enforcement in general in the United States does anything but enforce laws. It is a political tool of the left. And he says that pretty openly. And in fact, he's written a book about it, and it's pretty good. In Their Own Words is what it's called. And it's about how the Democrat Party has openly embraced Marxism and has used the different agencies of the federal government to be able to promote their agenda. And all I can tell you is, you know, you're spot on with all this stuff. What's the answer to this thing? And I keep saying it, and I know you do too. Average Americans, if we have 20% of the American people absolutely refuse to go along with this crap and organize themselves to say, we're not going to play this game anymore, we would be able to control the dialogue. Because they get away with this stuff because they keep us all separated. And that's also why they're doing the COVID-19 crap.
That's right. That's right. But look at what was the one political move that that had the chance of upsetting the apple cart in your lifetime? The one that I would say it was the Tea Party
had a good one. I was going to say the Ron Paul movement, definitely.
Ron Paul was very good. I think the Tea Party movement was, until it was co-opted by the Republican Party, had the ability to control the nation. But when we look at even the Revolutionary War, was it 3% or 5% of the people that actually fought?
Yeah, 3%.
20% was loyalists to England, and the rest of it were just in the middle. What we need is solid leadership. But see, you have to start a movement somewhere, right? And you have to select rather than people selecting themselves, you need to have people get behind someone with shared values. I think the key is outside the Democrat and Republican Party, and I think the key is within the church. Mm-hmm. I really do. Mm-hmm. I think the key is within the church, because it's the only organization where you can, you have the ability to influence the largest amount of people with truth, right? Mm-hmm. It's not that we've been seeing that. I'm not even holding up the American church as this paragon of virtue for freedom in our country. I think it's been the opposite. But I think it's the place where if we organized along what I would call righteous lines, mm-hmm. that we'd have an opportunity to change. I mean, you look at these foundations, their biggest funding, what I've seen, is towards abortion.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Big time abortionists, big right. time. And you know, they talk about how Black Lives Matter and all these things that they're promoting. At the same time, you look at who has suffered the most from the abortion mandates and the abortion programs, and it's been the Black community.
Right.
40% of all abortions in the United States are Black families. Not, right. Or Black people. They're only 13% of the population, but they represent 40% of the abortions. And you look at Margaret Sanger and yep. the eugenicists that were behind this whole program. And guess what? They were the most adamantly racist people in the entire world.
Right.
Entire world. And, yeah. And they promoted this crap that went on in Nazi Germany and all throughout the world. Now, your point of going back to the church being a big part of this, people need to understand one thing. Man is inherently evil, mm-hmm. and God, common law and natural law, or yep. God's law, yep. Says that we need to be good stewards, but we need to do it in reverence to our Lord and Savior. Okay. Right. We need to understand that man is inherently evil. And what they're trying to sell us is that man isn't inherently evil, even though they want to kill most of us off because they do think we're inherently evil. Okay. I love the saying, I use this all the time. The problem with liberals is that they love humanity. They just hate humans.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, what it boils down to is that they've got such a double standard on this thing. And so they're directing all these anti-church activities because they recognize that first thing they've got to do is they've got to get rid of God in our lives because he is in direct opposition to secular humanism.
Yep. Yeah, but I still think it's the strongest. I think it's the strength in it is beyond the church organization, but it's a foundation of, based on morality, and there has to be a chain of accountability. Meaning that when you support people, they don't hold up to the values. They need to be gone, and it needs to be openly discussed in society. I mean, if someone's elected to office and they go in and they give up your rights to, say, water rights in Montana, well, mm-hmm. that's a pretty big deal.
Oh, yeah.
That's an accountability thing. If somebody goes in and says, yeah, you know, maybe red flag laws are okay. Well, that's a pretty big deal. Because somebody mm-hmm. can say, go in and say, well, you know, that Dan Happel, he's a nut guy. And I'm afraid he's going to hurt himself or somebody else. And the government can walk into your house and take your weapons mm-hmm. without the due process mm-hmm. of law. I mean, we could go on and on down the list, but I think that we need to have a moral foundation, a foundation that we can agree on. And then there needs to be accountability. I don't see either one in our political system today.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I mean, in fact, we did a great program that you and Jeff Wright were on, and that was way back, I think about 5 or 6 years ago. We did a program called on, we called the radio program laws are for the little people. Mm-hmm. And we were talking about how Hillary Clinton was getting away with all this crap with her personal computers and all the stuff that she was pulling. And it was like the laws are for the rest of us. It's not for them.
Yeah,
they're special. They can do whatever they want to do. So that's kind of where this whole process is. We've got two sets of rules. We've got a set of rules for you and me and the average people in the United States. And then we got another set of rules for the power elite.
Mm-hmm.
And they can get away with anything.
Well, I mean, you look at this foundation thing, right? I mean, Warren Buffett, his kids all have foundations. They can pass money back and forth between it, you know, whatever, millions, billions of dollars, it doesn't matter, annually. No accountability. Mm-hmm. None.
And yet Warren Buffett is one of the guys promoting how people aren't paying enough in taxes. They need to pay more in taxes. Yeah, sure. That's easy to say. Same thing with movie producer. You know, they promote this idea that somehow everybody's got to pay more taxes because they aren't paying enough. And yet they shelter everything they do under tax exempt foundations.
Yeah, they aren't going to. I mean, the point is, the rich are never going to pay the taxes. The taxation system, you said it earlier in the program, wasn't developed by you and me. It was developed by the elite, you know, and it's just a transfer of wealth, and it's a means of control of which, you know. And the thing is, I find it amazing is everything's about making you feel guilty. Well, if you don't pay your taxes, are you going to have a police force? If you don't pay your taxes, are you going to have a defense force? If you don't pay your taxes, who's going to empty the garbage? That kind of stuff, or for clean water, or whatever. Same with the COVID. Well, if you don't wear a mask, you're going to kill somebody else. Mm-hmm. Well, if the masks work, I'm not killing anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, as human beings, we don't even. Julie and I were in a grocery store the other day with, of course, not a mask, and some guy goes, "Well, there's a couple that don't understand about masks." Julie, all her 115 pounds of her, went over and said, "Will you have a mask on? If they work, you're safe."
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he didn't know what to say.
Mm-hmm.
But the point and she's a nurse. But we swallow all this stuff. Well, the government said, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we don't have a representative government. So what we have to do is figure out how to have a representative government. I'm telling you, Dan, I'm full of hope. Like, I am not discouraged at all. I think we live in the most exciting times of our life. And it's up to us to do something about it. We have the power. I'm telling you, we are not the minority. Mm-hmm. We are not the minority. We're the majority. We're being controlled by a small sliver of people, these very extremely wealthy globalists, internationalists, UN associate, whatever you want to call them, but you know it's a global agenda. But we in America are the majority. Mm-hmm. What we have to do is have a rally. We have to have something to rally behind. And I think it is really about taking back our country and saying no more. And it starts with money. You know, people say, "Well, I'm not a boycotter." Well, maybe we should all be boycotters.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we should.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we should identify what corporations we will no longer support in any way, shape, or form.
Right.
You know, I mean, when COVID happens, you can go to Walmart and you can go to Costco and you can go to everything else and not get COVID. But you can't go down to mom and pop store and buy a gallon of milk, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the point is we should determine what do we support and what we don't. I don't know.
We've got to just stand up and be counted. And thing is, what you're pointing out is perfect, because who benefited from this COVID-19 thing? It's all the mega corporations that are putting all this money into tax exempt foundations. Mm-hmm. It's not the mom and pop store. Do you realize that 40% of the small businesses in this country have either been permanently crippled or completely eliminated through this COVID transfer. It's the biggest transfer of wealth this mm-hmm. country has ever seen. And what is the number one target of the Marxists and the internationalists, the globalists, targeting the United States? It's getting rid of the middle class because they're the ones that have the independence to speak out.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's interesting because a friend, you know, I lived down in Australia for 3 years, and a couple of years ago, a friend of mine wrote me and said, don't the Americans get it? If we lose the United States, we lose the world.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the truth. I mean, the last bastion of freedom really is the United States. I mean, mm-hmm. although it doesn't appear from the last election that we have, I believe that we still have the ability to affect the outcome.
Mm-hmm.
But
we do. If more people in the United States had actually been willing to stand up and not just accept the fact that, you know, the minority, the people that lost the election, had the temerity and had the political influence that they could stand up and say, if you disagree with the fact that we stole this election, if you call us out for that, we're going to identify you and we're going to get rid of you. We're going to make life tough for you.
Right.
Now, why in the world didn't everybody else just say, screw you people. We're right. done with this crap. We're not going to accept any of it.
Right.
No, you know, the American people, I mean, they want to get along. They want to be nice. They want to do the right thing. You know, sometimes doing the right thing takes a backbone.
Oh,
you know, and I'm not a big Teddy Roosevelt fan, but he said something one time that really made a heck of a lot of sense. He was talking about the legislature. He's talking about Congress. He said, I've seen finer men's backbones carved from bananas. Boy, if that doesn't describe American people, I don't know what does.
Yeah. I think we have an enormous opportunity in the coming months, maybe in the coming year, to shape our political future, because more and more people, I think, are understanding this dark path that our country is going down. Mm-hmm. There are more and more people realizing, and if that wasn't true, if that wasn't true, we wouldn't have, I mean, I can't go in any place and find ammunition, or I guess you can find rifles and pistols, but they're just sticks or rocks without ammo, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, why is that? Because why is Bitcoin getting a lot of money?
Mm-hmm.
Because people are realizing your money's becoming worthless. They're afraid of the government. That's why, I mean, we didn't have this whole, we don't have a whole new culture of people that have become hunters. That's not why they're buying all this ammo,
mm-hmm.
right? It's because people fundamentally understand that there are problems. They fundamentally understand it. So what I'm saying is we have an enormous opportunity today to influence the future of our nation mm-hmm. like never before. I'm telling you that you've been doing this, you know, your passion for America, your passion for freedom, your passion for the Constitution is evident in the years and years since I've known you, with the hope of educating people to what's going on so that they change. What I think we see today is we see people understanding that we're going down a dark path. What they need is they need leaders to stand up and say, this is the direction that we're going to take. And I think I really honestly, I'm a little disappointed in Trump saying that he was going to support the Republican Party. Maybe he is, maybe he isn't. I don't know. You never know exactly what that guy's going to do. But it has a huge opportunity to fundamentally shape the future political future by fundamentally turning away from the Republican Party. Mm-hmm. I think the Republican Party is probably, I'm not saying there's not good people in the Republican Party, but I think it's fundamentally more evil than the Democratic Party.
Well, it is. And, you know, one of your comments about that, and we've talked about that, the Democrats, at least they admit they're a bunch of Marxist progressive mm-hmm. socialists, and that they want to fundamentally, as Obama always said, or yep. now old Biden, they want to fundamentally transform America into a part of the New World Order, a socialist super state. Okay. Yep. But the Republicans lie to us, and they right. tell us that no, they want freedom. They want the Constitution, all this stuff. The truth is, and this is an analogy that I absolutely love. It's like the Democrat Party is in a car, okay? And they're racing. They've got their foot to the floor, racing towards socialism. Meanwhile, the Republican Party is in a car heading the same direction, but they're trying to drive the speed limit.
Yep.
That's the difference.
Yep. No, I 100% agree with you. And but what I hate about the Republican Party is that they will lie to your face about mm-hmm. what they're going to do. They yep. will lie to your face. They will ask for your support. You'll give it to them, and they will turn around and kick you in the guts.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I feel. I think, like I say, we have an opportunity. Let's not waste it. We have an opportunity because people are disenfranchised with their government, with their country. Mm-hmm. We know that even Democrats feel disenfranchised with a Biden presidency because mm-hmm. everybody knows he's a fake president. Well, you know, there's probably a small number of people that think that he was legitimately elected. But here we sit in a moment of time where we have the most disgruntled amount of people in our nation. They see the dark path that the nation's going on. It's reflected in their purchases of ammunition and food supplies and everything else. Let's not squander the opportunity to enlist their feelings to change our nation, to restore mm-hmm. once again a constitutional republic that has a representative government.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, if we have to stand on every street corner and from the top of every building and shout, "Do not support the Republican Party," it's a mm-hmm. very failed, very evil, cowardly organization. Filled to, with the same people that, I mean, you just talked about the new American, and how is Danes or Gianforte's voting, right? Mm-hmm. No different than the Democrats.
Yeah, Danes was 1 point better than Tester, who is a liberal Democrat who is on Trevor Loudon's list of progressive socialists in government.
Right. I mean, John Tester's never... I don't think that guy's probably ever had an original thought in his life. He mm-hmm. does what the party tells him to. But the point is the Republican sitting across the aisle is doing the exact same thing. But like I say, this is an exciting time because people are disgruntled. We need to give them a vision. We need to paint a vision, and it's got to be a simple vision.
Mm-hmm.
Even if the vision is sound money, private property ownership, freedom of speech.
Mm-hmm.
Three or four things that we paint a vision that this is what we're going for. We can't win everything back that we've lost in the last 200 years, but we can win these things.
Right. Well, I want to do a little plug for your book. You did a book called You, The Last Best Hope for America. I want to, Thumper, I sent you the link for that. If you could pull that Amazon book link up. But Bill, that little short book, and you can read it in about 3 hours, two or 3 hours. It's not, I don't even remember how many pages it is, but it's not a big book, right. But it is so fundamentally correct and so easy to understand and does such a good job of describing why we need to protect our Constitution. And we've got it up on screen now, and I tell people, absolutely, you need to read this book. Bill, all I can say is that this one little book that you wrote did a tremendous amount to I guess strengthened my resolve in you as a as an individual, because I knew you before you wrote the book. But at the same time, when you did the book, it just, you know, you did it in such a good way. You wrote it in such a simple, clear language way that I'll tell you what, if all of America would read this book, they would have a different country. And I have to say that we would.
No, appreciate that. That's very kind. I know that what brought me to that point is I thought if people would actually understand what's going on, they would do something about it.
Mm-hmm. I think if I can make a little note here, I've been trying to put that link in the live chat so people can link to that, the file that I've got up on screen right now. But they have got that link so long, I don't know if that link will work. If somebody out there in the live chat will click on that and see if you can pull up that Amazon page, and let me know if that link works for you or not. Okay. Thank you.
Well, I have to say, if we can, and again, I actually need to do this, Bill. I've got a whole, I bought a whole case of these books. In fact, I think at one time, didn't I get 3 cases of these books from you at one point?
I think you did.
I still have some of those books, and I guess what we're going to need to do is we're going to need to use them as a promotional tool. So let me figure out a plan here, and we will have like the first, you know, we'll do during a program first 10 people that contact us, you know, we'll give a copy of the book. We've done that in the past with some of our other guests on books and things that they've done. But Bill, you actually, I think you and probably more than just about anybody else have a political future as an independent independent candidate. And I know you've at various times thought about running for a governor, for U.S. Senator or U.S. Congress or something like that, but you've never actually completely pulled the plug on it and done it. I think we've got time now in this country, and Rick Jor is another one. You two guys are, I think, two of the most electable candidates in the entire country, if we can get the program started early enough that we can get the support behind you and make this thing happen. What do you think about that?
Well, you know, like I absolutely would serve. I absolutely would. Yeah, I don't, you know, I always kind of believe that, you know, if I look historically, I think the people need, I don't know how to say this, but most politicians are self-promoting narcissists that believe they're the best things.
What would ever give you that impression?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What I think is if the people would get behind the right individuals, we would change our nation. Mm-hmm. And they aren't necessarily going to be the guys men or women that are going to go out there and run. Cause I think that's a really, my experience with the political thing, it was extremely an ugly, ugly, affair. And of course, as you know, it takes a lot of money.
Mm-hmm. Takes a lot of money, and you're going to have a lot of opposition on it. You know, we talk about the Republican Party, as you well know, Bill. I've been right at the center of the Montana Republican Yep. Party for at least a couple of decades. And one of the things that I've experienced firsthand is that the political culture of the Republican Party, they don't want free thinking constitutional Americans. I was the biggest threat in the world to them. And you know, you were witness of when I ran for the state chair of the Montana Republican Party. I mean, they pulled out all the stops to make sure I couldn't get that office. And as it turned out, I almost did anyway. But boy, it wasn't for lack of trying on their part.
Yeah, but that's the whole thing. They have, I mean, I look at the people during this last election that, number one, I'm going to say, were only elected because Trump was on the ticket.
Yeah.
They're down ballot votes. Number two,
honestly think Daines is one of those.
Oh, absolutely. 100%. I think Bullock would have cleaned his clock. I think Gianforte, Daines, and Rosendale, all of them were elected because of down ballot voting for Trump, number one. Mm-hmm. Number two, is that the best we have in Montana? And I say no.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
No, but the Republican Party, for as much as, you know, since I retired and have been back here, I've watched this and I've watched it and watched it. They just continue to rehash the same old candidates with the same, there isn't an original thought. I haven't seen an original thought out of one of these people running for office.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, none of them has a plan. Would you hire somebody to work for you? Let's say you're building a house, and even if you had the plans and they had no plan on how to build that house for you, would you hire them?
Mm, not hardly.
You know, these guys are running for office and they have no plan. I have never heard one of them articulate a plan for, you know, that would be beneficial to the people of Montana.
Well, the thing is, Gianforte is a perfect example. He said, I'm a businessman. I was successful in business. That's the reason you need to elect me. Mm-hmm. And I have a plan for Montana. But that plan doesn't include constitutionalism. It doesn't include going back to the Bill of Rights and going back to what made this country great. Their plan is always some form of socialism, some form of largesse for individuals so that they can buy votes. It's never a clinging, say, I'm going to break from all this nonsense and I'm going to go back to the Constitution. And if you want something for nothing, you better vote for somebody else because I'm not your guy. You know, I did that in Madison County and you saw how that worked.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I was a one term county commissioner because I wouldn't promise people something for nothing.
Yep. Yeah, I agree 100%.
Well, Bill, I hate to say it, but we've run out of time. I see the ladies are ready to go. Man, we could have had this discussion for a couple of days. We just need to get you back on, and we'll do this again real soon. But I fully expect that should you choose to run for office, I can tell you one thing. I'll help you in any way I can to build a cadre of supporters to make that happen, because you would be you've got the experience. You would be a great governor or senator or whatever you choose to be. So, because you're a statesman, you don't give a damn about the politics. You care about the republic.
That part I will agree with you.
Yeah. Okay, buddy.
All right, brother. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Great to see you. Ladies, good to see that you're ready to go. Thank you. And join us again next Tuesday, and we'll connect a few more dots.
And, Bill, thank you for coming on Patriot Soapbox. Good to see you again. And
see you guys.
Great conversation today, and enjoyed it.
You'll probably have to join Thumper on one of his Hyperdrive shows or something here shortly, so...
Now, if you like the techie stuff and some of the stuff, I've got a late night show on Mondays and Wednesdays, starts at 11 p.m. Pacific time.
I like it, but I'm a boomer. My son keeps telling me, "Dad, you're such a boomer."
Well, so am I. and you know, you 75% of our listeners on this channel are boomers, just like you and I and Dan.
Awesome, awesome.
All right.
All right. See you guys.
You're in the midst of you're in friendly territory here, Bill.
Sounds good.
Absolutely.
All right.
And
thank you.
I wear the boomer thing proudly.
All right, guys. Well, thank you. And looks like the ladies are ready to go. So we're signing off for this week. We'll see you on Sunday, and we'll see you again on Tuesday.
All right, Dan. Thank you. Have a good one.
Tomorrow all the things were gone. I'd worked for all my life, and I had to start again with just my children and my wife. I thank my lucky stars to be living here today,
where the flag still stands for freedom, and they can't take that away.
And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free. And I won't forget the men who died, who gave that right to me.
And I gladly stand up next to you and defend her still today, 'cause there ain't no